Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Yo, yo, yo. Welcome to Starbucks. I'm your host, Anthony DiNardo. With me, we have Jim Rosati, live on summit location. What's up, Jim? How you doing?
Yeah, how's it going? If you're watching us, good morning from San Antonio, Texas hotel room. If you're listening, sorry if my audio is a little off. It's not my normal setup, but hey, you gotta grind through, you know, when you're talking about the 14 and 15 Pirates.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, you couldn't miss this.
No, absolutely not.
So you're here for the people, making sure they have a show, because everyone wants to hear about the 14 and 15 Pirates right now. Mainly because also there's absolutely nothing that we're going to duplicate from last week or the week before. You know, this is all new things that they're doing right now. Honestly, Jim, to be real, I don't know what to talk about on this show. Because I feel like the one thing we talk about behind the scenes is, like, you know, obviously, like with NS9 Live and Starbucks, I mean, we do post games every day, right? So we got to make sure when we do these shows, you know, we talk about something different. It's not just like rehashing a post game. And Jim, the post games are kind of rehashing the post games. I mean, we can literally just set record and replay last week's post game and say, today it's and just dub over Giants or dub over whatever and just say A's, and I'm sure it'll come to fruition tonight.
Yeah, there's it's not the best way to start off a podcast episode, right? I don't know what to talk about today. So it's what you said. Way to you know, really bring people in, DiNardo. No, but I mean, at the same time, like, this, it's been the same story now for at least 2 weeks, right? And that's, we're getting good starting pitching. The bullpen's been, you know, a little bit shaky at times, but they actually look pretty good during the San Francisco series outside David Bednar. But it's just the offense, right? They just continue to struggle. The one time they were able to string together some extra base hits, right? They won this weekend. That's just their issue right now, is they're not driving the ball. They're not getting extra base hits. They're not hitting the ball over the fence. And other teams are. And it's not that they're doing it a ton, right? Like, we're talking about, like the Pirates should have taken at least 2 of 3 against San Francisco last weekend. They gave up 0 runs over 8 innings one game, and they lost, right? The other game, they gave up 3 runs. So it's the pitching staff is doing everything you want them to do. It's just the offense time and time and time again is just failing. They're just failing at executing what they're supposed to do.
This team scored 19 runs in 7 games this past week. And that's just this week. Because again, the week before, pretty much the same problem. And the week before, pretty much the same problem. Like when you can barely score 2 runs a game, you're not going to win many games. That's what's happening. I mean, the starting pitching has looked damn good. Jared Jones yesterday didn't have his stuff. I've talked about, like, I'm low-key anticipating. No one wants to see it. I'm not waiting and wanting to see a loss, right? But it's like I'm waiting and wanting to see Jared Jones not have his stuff, have a bad outing. Yesterday was it. Yesterday he did not look all that good. And he fought through and still did enough to make sure this team was in the game to win. 3 earned runs. I mean, we're talking about 3 earned runs. This guy looked bad. He gave up 3 earned runs, and it was game over. This is just too much, Jared. You can't do that. We don't do that here. You can't give up 3 earned runs in a game and expect this team to win. He did everything you asked for yesterday in having a bad start. You know, when this is the game that you don't have your stuff and you're not on. He only gave up 3 earned runs, and this team still just, it was done. 3-2, they lost.
Yeah, and actually just to touch on that, it was kind of impressive seeing Jared Jones. That was the first time we've seen him look like mortal, right? and he was still even able to get through 5 innings, 3 runs. Like, he put together an effective start. So that was pretty exciting to see. What was he, the first Pittsburgh Pirate ever to start his career with 6 straight 5-inning, 3-run or less performances?
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know that specifically, but I'm sure.
Yeah, first one ever to do that. So, Pirates have been around for a long time. No one's ever done that before. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, like you mentioned, I mean, the only person doing anything yesterday was Rowdy Tellez, right? The one guy we've kind of been poo-pooing on. I will say this about Tellez, right? If we're just kind of talking about the offense here, I think I'm not going to say that he's back, right?
Back but from what?
I think he hit rock bottom. Like, I think he's officially hit rock bottom, and it can't get worse, right? From where it was, let's say on Saturday.
There's I think no that's way fair to say, worse. Jim. I mean, so, when you're that low, there's really not much further you can go. I put out stats like,
yeah,
his OPS was worse. It was over 100 points lower than Cole Tucker's.
And career. I think I retweeted you, and it was like roughly 60 or 70 points worse than Josh Van Meter's Pirates OPS. Yeah. So like,
and it was like, yeah, 20 like, points higher than Austin Hedges.
Brett says, hey, Jim, stop asking if it can get worse. I really don't think it's possible. Like, it's not possible to get any worse, right? So, like, on the bright side, it's only uphill from here for Rowdy Tellez, right?
Sure. If we're going to stick to Rowdy, I just want to interject and say now Henry Davis is at that point. So
that's true. Henry Davis also, I feel like, has been at rock bottom for a while.
Yeah.
It just keeps his rock his bottom. Yes,
it's now like 480 something, isn't it? 490 maybe. Man, it's tough. It is tough.
I can't imagine Davis has too much longer with this team.
No.
He can't, right? Like, you can't just keep trotting a guy out like that.
Mm-mm. No. You just can't. You just can't. Like, the good news is there is a quality veteran potentially that's on his way back to, you know, be on this club. So, but like,
a lot of work there.
Well, what I'm alluding to is like, you might be willing to say whoever's in AAA come up. Like, that's what I'm getting to. You know, like, you talk about Henry Davis, like, at least there's Grandal there, but I'd be willing to almost make this move no matter who's in AAA right now. And just saying, Henry Davis, you got to go. So, like, at least there's a quality MLB vet back there of some sort. So, you know, you're not just completely sweating at the catcher position right now. But, yeah, Henry Davis, like, he just has to go.
Yeah, I
Jim, I mean, I don't want still, him. This I don't team want leads him. In caught looking strikeouts by a large margin, percentage-wise, total number-wise. Like, it's just, again, it's just the same thing.
It is. It's the same thing every night. I was doing the post-game show on Saturday, and that was the game, you know, we won in extra innings, right? But like nothing was happening up until that point. And I think Tyler and I were mentioning really just like how awful and boring the game was up in that point. And there was a comment on our YouTube page, and it was like, how is a pitching duel boring? I'm like, pitching duels can be very fun, right? But we've reached the point now where if the Pirates aren't scoring, it's not a pitching duel. Like, this is just pathetic offense that we're seeing night in and night out. Like, we aren't seeing pitching duels. These, don't get this mistaken. Like, this isn't just two really good pitching staffs going up against each other night in and night out, just dominating hitters. Like, this is just bad baseball we're watching for the most part, right? Like,
right.
Three true outcome baseball is pretty boring as is, right? Like, when everyone's either striking out, walking, or homering, it makes for pretty boring baseball games, right? You like to see balls hit in play. You like to see runners stealing bases. You like to see guys making plays out in the field, right? That's what makes baseball exciting a lot. When you're playing three true outcome baseball and you're only getting two out of the three outcomes and the one outcome you're missing is the one that's any sort of fun, these games are just, they're terrible to watch at times. So, yeah, it's been rough as a Pirates fan just watching the last few weeks because it hasn't been a fun brand of baseball. Like, we're seeing a lot of strikeouts. We're seeing balls not put in play. We're seeing balls not hit over the fence. Like, it's been a bad brand of baseball here these last few weeks.
Yep. And sadly, still every game winnable. They went 3-4. And in those four losses, they total seven total runs.
Matt says again, like, in the comments, literally very winnable baseball. Interesting.
Yeah. Because at least when you see their mistakes, you laugh. And there's less mistakes made.
Right. They're not getting paid a lot.
That's the other problem. You want to talk about pitchers' duels, right? I mean, sure, if there's actual like pitching dueling going on. But like when you're just making Bryce Wilson look like a Cy Young candidate, that's not really he's out there dueling.
Yeah, Bryce Wilson's just not out there dealing, right?
Right. Yeah. So that's the problem. You know, again, Corbin Burns out there, Zach Wheeler's out there, you know, and Jared Jones out there, and he's dealing, and there's like an actual pitcher's duel. Sure, that's exciting. But just seeing an offense being so terrible that Bryce Wilson just looks like a stud. Mm-mm. I don't find that too much entertainment.
But yeah, and there's a lot being made here too. Like there's a comment here from Matthew, fire the hitting coach, right? I mean, that's just the easy scapegoat you could do right here, right? Is firing Andy Haynes. Nothing changes by firing Andy Haynes. This isn't an Andy Haynes thing, right? This isn't like Andy Haynes came in and said, "All right, guys, here's what we're gonna do." This is an organizational philosophy top down, right? This doesn't start with Andy Haynes. This starts with Ben Cherington and his staff. And they're saying, this is how we want to approach hitting, not only at the major league level, but throughout the entire organization. And we can see how it's been failing, really, not only up top, but you know, we'll bring Murphy on here later here too. And it's just throughout the minor leagues, you're seeing there's a few bright spots offensively, but for the most part, these hitting prospects are not doing what you want them to do.
Yeah,
they're all strike. They're it's the same stuff, right? The same stuff we're seeing in the majors is what we're seeing in the minors, and that's high strikeout rates. We're getting walked a ton, right? Tons of walks. They're selling out for power. The problem though is that, where's the power, right? I have nothing with the actual philosophy. I have nothing wrong with the actual philosophy, right? It can work if executed properly. It's probably not my preferred brand of baseball, but hey, you know what? If that's how you want to do it and it works, cool. The problem right now is that they're not getting the power payout that comes with selling out for power, right? So when you're selling out for power, you're not getting much of anything else. Right now, they're not getting the payout. That's the issue. So I said, it's more than just Haynes. It's Haynes, firing Haynes, like Matt says here, you know, it'd be a good PR move, right? I think fans would be like, oh yeah, hell yeah, we fired Andy Haynes. Somebody's being held accountable. But guess what? This isn't Andy Haynes' offense. He's just a pawn in the whole philosophy from an organizational standpoint.
Right. Though I could get behind this. Fire Ben, then fire Jim. Great comment, Matthew.
No.
Yes.
I think he's on fire. Then fire. Honestly,
I don't know. Like,
I'd be cool with you firing me. I don't know if you know this, but it's so early over here, and this seems a little ridiculous, but I couldn't even. I actually like set my alarm early to like go get coffee before this because we're an hour behind. I couldn't even go get coffee before this. Everything was still closed.
Mm.
So I'm doing this. 6 a.m. Central Time, no coffee.
I'll say this. Fire Jim stuff. I mean, you're way more dedicated than Ben still asleep.
That's true. Ben's sleeping.
Right. But no, to be more realistic here. Yeah. Like, I'm not impressed with Andy Haynes. That's my personal opinion on it. It's been that way for a while, right? I'm not impressed with him as a hitting coach. But I do think, much like other things we talk about, like that's a move. That's just a move. Like you're making a move to make a move, but does it make sense? So who comes in and replaces him? Right. And I agree with you. Like it's not where I'm saying and sticking up for Andy Haynes and he needs to be the guy. It's just, I don't think to like your point, that's really going to make a big difference either, because the next guy that comes in is probably very similar. I think there is a lot of stuff on Andy Haynes' plate to digest and say, you know, here's your problems with this. But again, I don't think firing him is going to solve the problem, because the problem, like you say, is organizational.
Yep. Yeah. Again, firing him could maybe give a little bit of a boost. Like firing him would appease the fan base, but I don't know what firing him would actually accomplish at all. Like if you don't like this kind of baseball, two things can happen. Either they start executing on their philosophy and then you're like, okay, I'll deal with this, right? Or it never works. And then the only way to get rid of this philosophy is to either change the minds of the people at top and say, hey, this isn't working. You need to change the way you're doing this, or get rid of the people at top.
Right.
And we're not to the point yet where you're getting rid of Ben Cherington. Like I'm not a huge Ben Cherington fan by any means, but I mean, he deserves this year, right? For us to see kind of what happens. We can't be getting rid of our general manager on April 29th when we're a game under 500.
Right. So that's the fans right now, though. That's a hard, it's a hard one.
Yeah. Right.
But at any rate, yeah. I mean, I don't know how much further we want to go on this. The problem is that everything just still kind of exists. I kind of find this funny with what Brett just said here. It's who was the offensive coordinator before Matt Canada? Everyone hated him too, right? And then Matt Canada came
offensive along. Coordinators always are they're just the.
Well, I guess what I'm alluding to is, if I recall correctly, the non-Steeler fan here, everyone hated the previous one. Then Matt Canada came in and it was like the same offense, and everyone hated him too, right? Is that essentially what happened?
So the person before Canada was Randy Fichter.
There you go. Everyone hated him.
Yeah.
He got fired. Matt Canada came in. It was like it basically the same thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So like you're saying, that's what I'm alluding to here as well. It's kind of that situation. It's like you can fire Andy Haynes and everyone will rejoice. But then Matt Canada's coming along. And everyone's still going to hate this offense.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So, at any rate, we want to move forward?
Yeah, let's move forward.
Go ahead and say your thing, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Let's just do a quick ad read here. Show sponsored by Chris Gates Fitness as usual, every week this week. Chris is an online fitness show from Pittsburgh. He's a huge Pittsburgh sports fan and a friend of the show. Chris works with people all over town, all over the world to chase their fitness goals, whether it's losing body fat, building muscle, or doing both while improving your overall health and wellness. Chris helps people find a sustainable approach with diet and exercise to make progress that sticks. He works with me, been doing holding me accountable to losing some weight. So shout out Chris for that. But he also shares a ton of information for free on his social media accounts every single day. So if you're looking for tips, tricks, strategies to use with your diet and exercise, make sure you give him a follow. Just search for Chris Gates Fitness on literally any social media platform, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it nowadays, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. He's on LinkedIn. He's on Threads, everything, YouTube, and you'll find him there. So make sure you give him a follow. He's got tons and tons of free content that can help you out with whatever goals you're trying to accomplish.
We call it Twitter. We don't do that here. Yeah. By the way, holding people accountable. Do you want to be the hitting coach then?
you don't want me to be a hitting coach.
What's up, Anthony?
What's going on?
Same old, same old. What's going on with you, buddy?
Enjoying listening to the that first part. That was very very depressing.
Well, that's why we have you on. But, you're here to lift our spirits now.
But I did like the exact opposite last week, didn't I?
You did.
I brought you guys down even more with the Nikki G stuff.
Yeah,
that's true. We were riding high. We were trying to ride high, and you brought us down. So, yeah. What again, Anthony Murphy from Bucks on Deck. Thanks for hopping on here today to talk a little bit about, some updates in the minor league system, some prospects, what they did this past week. Is there anything you know that the Pirates can look forward to, right? This is kind of the part of the show where hopefully there's some future optimism here.
We actually had some decent hitting performances last week.
Hey,
that's
a win.
They were all in the lower levels. They're all in the lower levels, so I don't know what that's going to do for the major league team this year. But
they're ready.
Yeah, there's
bring them up.
Send them. One of them is a catcher, or two of them is a catcher. Boom. So Garrett Forster, he was a second, third round pick last year. Struggled pretty bad at the beginning of the year. It looks like he was struggling to adjust to some like breaking pitches and usual stuff and all that. Got left behind in Bradenton because he's making the switch to catcher. So they left him in Bradenton to kind of slowly work on that stuff. Really tough start. this past week, he kind of started turning things around. He had 7 hits total, 2 doubles, walked 3 times. I wrote an article about him on Sunday, some stuff that he'd been doing really well at the plate. It really seemed like he was trying to pull the ball a little bit too much and get out in front of stuff, and did a really good job protecting like the outer half of the plate, started setting stuff straight up the middle, going the other way. Like both of his doubles were to right field. He hit them the other way. So that was really impressive. Really impressive week from him. The chase rate is like last I checked before it updated, it was like a elite level chase rate. Like it was like 13%. He was only chasing 13% of the time. The zone contact has really improved over the last week or so. So looks like he's finally getting adjusted. So, and you know, there's like that added thing too, trying to learn, because he's never caught before. He never caught in college. So learning that extra position, adding that on top of, you know, learning the hit at the pro level, stuff like that. So it looks like it's starting to finally come around for him. So that was really good to see, because he was a guy that like MLB Pipeline even picked as a guy to like watch for they listed him as a first baseman, but they kind of picked him as a guy to watch, and you know, he came out and kind of fell flat on his face at first. So
is there any reason why they made that position switch? Like,
so I know what, like, that it was curious at first, but then like Nola brought up that some teams actually talked to him, like multiple teams talked to him like during the draft process about potentially doing that. So like, I think he had caught some in high school or something like that previously. Didn't do it in college, but like it was just something that was like just like a random note that like, hey, some teams talked about it. I guess the Pirates would have been one of them. And then I know Tim on P2, he was the one that kind of talked to somebody inside the organization, and they tried him out there, and just like every catcher person that they have in the system just like had nothing but great things to say. He's done fairly well back there. He's throwing out like 25% of the base dealers right now.
Call him up.
Like, yeah. So, I mean, he's kind of getting there. He hasn't looked horrible behind the plate, and the bat's starting to slowly come around. So,
all right. So, a little bit of good news, but yeah, it sounds like as we talk about this organizational philosophy thing, he sounds like one of those guys, if
you feel like the organization thing is to be like very patient and that kind of stuff, you know, wait for your pitches. Like the little bit that I saw from him last year before he got hurt was very frustrating to me, because like I wanted to see him swing the bat just to kind of get an idea of what kind of hitter he was, that kind of stuff. And he walked like 10 times in like 30 plate appearances last year before he got hurt. Like he was on the spring breakout game, like the only 2 at bats he had, he walked both times. So like he's a guy that very well, like when he's going, like I feel like he's another hitter on that Bradenton team that could like walk 100 times in a season. Like he has that kind of plate awareness and stuff like that. And like so far, like very small sample size, but like he's done very well, like oddly better when he's behind the count than he is when he's ahead of the count. So like the article I wrote, like of the hits that I pulled up, like 4 or 5 of them were with 2 strikes. So like he's a very good 2 strike hitter. He has a very good 2 strike approach and stuff like that. He puts himself in those positions a lot because he's trying to work the count and get deep. And you know, he walks quite a bit. He walked 3 times last week. But just when he gets to the 2 strikes, he doesn't really seem too fazed by it, and he's been doing much better with it. So
awesome. What else offensively? Let's stick with the offense. What else offensively are we seeing throughout the system this past week?
So, like, I know his teammate down in Bradenton, I know we've talked about him on here before, Omar Afonso, a little bit of a scare with him for missed a couple games. Looked like he had, like, when he slid into second, he kind of, like, bummed his shoulder a little bit. He got pulled after that. So he missed a couple games there, came back over the weekend. He went 4 for 10 total, 3 doubles, drew a couple walks. Looks like they started to, you know, with Forster there, they're starting to put a little more focus with Alfonso playing first base. He's kind of got like a pretty big frame. So I'm like, he did pretty well catching last year. So I kind of figured that maybe long-term he could stick behind the plate, but like with the way the frame's kind of going, I can kind of see like first baseman long-term kind of thing. The exit velocity numbers kind of play into like maybe there being some added power there, you know, as he gets a little bit older. So I think he could profile well there at first. But yeah, solid week for him. Watch for the shoulder thing.
Yeah. He's repeating the level. If we're looking at Bradenton, right, and we're just saying, hey, who of this group do you think has the best chance to move to Greensboro the quickest? Would you say it's probably Forster, just from how advanced he is?
I would say Forster. I would say that the only reason that Forster started in Bradenton was because of the catching thing. If they were just gonna be like, okay, you're just gonna play third and first, they probably could have sent him straight to Greensboro. Being a college kid, I probably would have preferred that. But like, if you're going to work out, if you're saying like, okay, well, we wanted to keep in Bradenton near the complex and everything like that, near some added coaching and stuff like that because of the catching, then yeah. So Forster, I even believe like Alfonso probably could get there fairly quickly too. They have a couple catchers in Greensboro that they kind of like. And like Alfonso is still 20. He won't turn 21 till like right at the end of the season. So like, and he didn't like, he kind of split time between Bradenton and the complex last year. So like he doesn't have that much playing time in Bradenton. So.
I saw Tamar homered.
Homered. I guess like Tamar's the kind of guy, especially, you know, you guys talk about like the hitting philosophy and everything like that. I went back, like I have on my YouTube channel, like every single plate appearance that he had streamed back in Bradenton went right after he got drafted. And it kind of feels like it's been the same story. I don't know how long it takes for you to implement your philosophy on hitting. I don't know if like, okay, we draft you, this is what you do. Go do it kind of thing. But I do kind of feel like for as okay as he played in Bradenton and stuff like that, there's always been some red flags with his game. And I mentioned it in your guys' Discord the other day, like drafting a kid or giving a prep kid a 70 hit tool at a, you know, before he even stepped foot in pro ball, I feel like is setting people up for failure anyways. I mean, he was being compared to like Wade Boggs and Vlad Guerrero. And I think like Harold Reynolds said his batting practice reminded him of like Ken Griffey Jr. And so like
just the comps that get thrown around on draft day are
for a prep kid that, you know, like if it's a college kid, then maybe, cause he's pitched against, you know, more advanced competition, but like this was a high school kid. And I think too, like going on the hitting philosophy thing. And I think there's the way that they've drafted too, I don't think it's done them too many favors. I think they've gone too heavy into these guys have to hit kind of profiles. Like if they're not going to hit, they're not doing anything. Like Henry Davis, he was drafted for his bat. There was always questions about whether or not he was going to be able to catch. So like if he can't catch and he has to play first base, then he really has to hit, and that puts all the pressure on the bat. And then hitting's hard in the majors. Like we saw Jackson Holliday completely struggle, and it's an easy argument to say he's a better hitter than anyone in the Pirates system. So if he's going to struggle, then like people struggle. And then Nick Gonzalez was second base only. He hitting second base. He's got to hit to make it. Tamar Johnson, second base. Got to hit to make it. And
that is
failure.
That is a really good point. That the three hitters that they've drafted since Sherrington took over, none of them really play that Well, it's not that they don't play the premier position, right? Because you could say Henry Davis plays the premier position.
But does he play it well?
But the question was, like, can he actually play it, right? They're not drafting these, like, super toolsy center fielders and shortstops where it's like, okay, well, this guy's going to stick at center field. This guy's going to stick at shortstop. And then if he can do all these other things, he's a superstar, mm-hmm. right?
Like even if Jordan he can't Lawler hit, types. He's a...
Yeah.
Yeah, even yeah. if he can't hit, he's going to be a plus defender at a position that you really need a plus defender. And they just haven't really prioritized defense in much that they've done. And, like, yeah, I mean, that's evident on the major league team because they're, like, analytically one of the worst defensive teams in baseball.
So. And that even goes really for their later picks too. And not their super later picks, but you look at guys like Brannigan and Forrester and Lonnie White Jr., like these second, third rounders that they're taking too. Like same deal. Like, and that Lonnie White Jr. is super athletic. Like
he's a plus defender in center field. Yeah. He's got like a cannon arm. I mean, Brannigan's a really good defender as well. It's
just out of corner.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would make an argument that Brannigan is the best defensive shortstop in the system right now. He has the arm, he has the range and all that. I don't know if he sticks there long term and stuff like that, but
it's not too exciting.
He seems more like a utility guy at this point and all that stuff, but
gotcha. Speaking of Brannigan, I mean, he seems to be off to the best start of any offensive player, probably outside, you know, Nick Gonzalez at AAA.
Yeah.
How's he doing? I know he's repeating Greensboro. Can we get him out of Greensboro here soon, or how much longer has he got there?
I mean, I think I can't. There's really no one keeping him out of Altoona right now. I mean, you can put him at second or third and on there. He struggled a little bit with strikeouts this past week. You guys will like this one. It started looking like he started to look for a little extra power this week, and then the strikeouts started kind of going up a bit. I think he hit three home runs this past week against Greenville.
Three home runs, yeah.
Yeah. There was one game he went like 2 for 5, and he had a home run, a double, and then 3 strikeouts. So,
yep.
Some of them were like, there's been some like, there was like some questionable calls throughout the week in that series. Like I remember one game, one of the Greensboro pitchers, he got squeezed like pretty tightly with the strike zone. So there's some questionable strike three calls and stuff like that mixed in there. But yeah, he's starting to figure it out. And obviously you can make the case because he's in Greensboro again and he should probably be in Altoona and stuff like that. But I mean, he didn't play that many games in Greensboro last year. And then when you consider how much he struggled with the swing and miss and struggled with it quite a bit in the Arizona Fall League as well. It's progress. He's making progress. He's walking more. He's looking more like someone who's going to bat leadoff for you instead of like in the middle of the order. And he's got double plus speed. The speed, I would rate the speed higher than I would the power at this point. So I don't think he's going to hit for too much power as he goes up. Probably more like a 10 to 15 home run guy in the majors kind of thing. But he's a guy who could steal close to 30 bases, play really good defense at second, short, and third.
So kind of like Jared Triolo.
I would say he has more power than Jared Triolo. Mm. Should have more power, more actual speed than like I always felt like Triolo's speed was more base running IQ kind of thing. Like he knows when to go and how to go and that kind of stuff. Brannigan has more like natural speed than him, but yeah, very very close.
Got it. Both Indiana high school college people, weren't they?
Yeah.
Triolo
went to
Houston.
Indiana. Houston, yeah.
Yeah. Gorski was Gorski, Indiana.
Gorski was Indiana. Right. Brannigan was Notre Dame.
Okay.
You're so good.
Anything else offensively happening worth
talking about? sticking with the Greensboro, Charles McAdoo. He's starting to kind of he was kind of a guy to like he was a guy that a lot of people were talking about and mentioning. He's one of those profiles to like I kind of assumed he was going to do well in Greensboro. That like the real question would be like, okay, I'll let him kind of rake this year and kind of get comfortable to let him get his full season in, and then like I'll really turn my attention to it once he hits Altoona. Kind of like those kind of players. Hit the second home run of the season, went 6 for 20, couple RBIs. A little more strikeout this year than he did last year. I think he struck out like once in each game over the week and stuff like that. Kind of like he's another one of like the hit first guys. Like he's going to have to hit to go anywhere. They have him bouncing around all over the place. He's mainly been playing third base. It's been okay, but like not like he's not like the next Triolo or Brannigan or anything like that. He's going to move up based on how well he hits kind of thing.
So. Got it. Okay. Well, I mean, let's move over to the pitching side. It's been the clear strength of the organization. Mm-hmm. As far as these pitching prospects go, who looked good this week? Who maybe struggled? Who looked really good?
Well, now I have to give a shout out to Sean Sullivan, my boy Sean Sullivan. He pitched another good week there. Alex Stump had like a really good article on him the other day about how he's changed, you know, his arm angle and his approach and everything stuff. Really good stuff. It's worked. He's done really good this year. What is it? He's only allowed one run in his last two starts, which has gone 10 innings total. The strikeouts aren't really his thing. I think one of the games he had pitched like five shutout innings and had one strikeout. And then I think this past week he had three. So not a big strikeout guy, but like he's performing in Altoona. He's done really good. He did fairly well last year in Altoona. He's doing good again this year. He was a non-roster invite to spring training. I think he was probably like the most, I would say probably the most surprising like spring training non-roster invitee. I think the Pirates kind of pick up on something maybe he can be, you know, like a back end piece or just like a depth guy or something like that. Nola has a good point with that. Like we have a point to not talk. Like, I mean, I talked about nothing but guys before Altoona today, but like it's the real question is Altoona once they get there. But Sullivan, he's looked good this year, kind of doing his thing. You know, he's a command over stuff kind of thing. He's going to hit his spots and induce weak contact and you know, that kind of stuff that you want to see out of a number five starter. And Pirates have had good success with those kind of guys too.
I know he's definitely been someone to keep on everybody's radar for a while now.
Michael Kennedy, he's still pitching real back-to-back games now with throwing at least five innings, not walking anybody, which was a big thing for him last year. So he's not walking anyone. He struck out six, I think, this past time around. The fastball, he's putting in work with the fastball right now. Like he's only averaging 90 miles an hour with it, but like his whiff rate with it is right at 30%, which if you get at 30% with your whiff rate for a fastball, that's above average to pretty, you know, that's pretty good. And then when you factor in the fact that he's only throwing it 90 miles an hour, so like he's doing pretty good work with that. The slider is really good. He pitches backwards a lot, so he uses the slider a lot to get things going. He'll jump up ahead in the count with that, and then kind of finish guys off with the fastball. So it's interesting seeing them work and stuff like that. And then you know he's got the Cortez hesitation thing going still. Right.
Hey, if it works.
I mean, it works. It's working. It's working for him.
But yeah, two back to back really nice starts for him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's been good to see. I know though he's 19, he'll be 19 all year in Bradenton. So they'll still manage his workload a little bit and stuff like that. I wouldn't expect him to go any further than the five innings in a game this year. But it looked like they're being a little more aggressive with the pitch counts in Bradenton there. So I think they've really starting to ramp guys up there. I think even like Christian Curtis threw nearly 80 pitches on Sunday. So they're starting to get the pitch counts up there. So we'll start really get a good idea for how some of these guys do in the rotation.
Yeah. Well, I guess Skeens. Cool. You want to talk about Paul Skeens a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Close out with him.
Yeah.
I mean, he gave a run finally. Gave him a run.
Keep him down.
This week, though, this is his first week. Let's kind of do a week preview. He goes Tuesday, Sunday this week, doesn't he?
As long as they don't try to do anything funny Indianapolis got rained out or weathered out the last three games. They haven't played since Thursday, I think. So
I think Ben said that's not going to affect him.
I wouldn't this is Paul Skeens. Everyone else can kind of wait in Indy kind of thing. So I wouldn't mess with this thing. I can't imagine a scenario where they do, but that is something that if they wanted to get cute or whatever like that and find an excuse to push things back a little bit more. I mean, you haven't played a game since Thursday. So, but yeah, this should be his first time going Tuesday, Sunday. So first time actually on 4 days rest. He got up to what, 75, in between 75 and 80 pitches last time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was his longest outing innings wise, longest outing pitching wise. Yeah. I'm curious to see how this goes. Cause I think we talked about it. Like they did this thing with Jones too, his first time pitching on 4 days rest where they really limited him that second time.
Generally they do that. Especially throughout the system. Greensboro, I think the guy who's pitched on Sunday, they've only thrown like 40 to 50 pitches. That's it. They're a lot younger and a lot less experienced than someone like Skeens, obviously, but yeah, they throughout the system, it's really kind of scaled back the Sunday start usually. So I wouldn't imagine like they've been slowly building him up and stuff like that. I wouldn't imagine that this would be a week to where it's anything higher. But if you can consistently get maybe like keep him at the 75 on Tuesday and then 60 to 70 in game on Sunday. Maybe something along the lines of that. So like, I wouldn't expect this week to be like a buildup to like reach like an extra threshold, but this is probably a bigger milestone for him compared to getting the pitch count up higher.
So. Yeah. I mean, you think of like, boxes you need to check, right? this is like the last box he needs to check. I think one thing that we saw this past week that we hadn't seen, he really mixed in all of his pitches this last start. He was really he was throwing everything before, but he was really just kind of leaning on the fastball slider for the most part up until this point. This past week, we saw that splinker a whole lot, especially against righties. It looked really, really good. Throwing some changeups, I don't know if it was just StatCast getting messed up, but I think StatCast had him throwing like six different pitches this past week.
I can't remember who he talked to in all that, but he said like he uses like the same grip for like his slider, but depending on how like he gets ahead of the pitch for more or stays behind it, he can like manipulate it to look more to get like more horizontal run and stuff like that. So sometimes I think one of the pitches it picked up is a sweeper, so like, you know, obviously the sweeper gets more horizontal run, so like it's all the same grip technically, but it's how he manipulates it out of his hand and stuff like that that causes it to like pretty much break StatCast at this point.
All right. Are these the last two starts for Skeens in Indianapolis? Just your guess. Is he done after this week?
I can be the guy that like, I can build up some optimism or I can kind of just like bring down hopes again.
This is just your guess. This is your guess. This is your best.
I think I've mentioned it on here. Like we're in uncharted waters with like pitching prospects at this point, because like I said, like who would have ever expected Jared Jones to make the opening day roster?
Right.
So yeah, sure. This could be the last time that Skeens is in the minors, but like also I can see a scenario to where he's still down there for some more time. I mean, it's just one time doing the 4-day thing. Like, you could make a case that maybe you want to see him do the double start in a week twice before you bring him up, and then so that's like a whole nother month or something like that. So,
politician Murphy over here.
Yeah,
see, Jim,
yeah.
I'm not the only one that sees both sides.
Yeah,
that was a Ben Sherrington answer, just a bunch of words without answering the question.
Thank you.
I don't know. At least Anthony threw in a yeah, sure.
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
All right. Well, you got anything else for Murphy DiNardo?
No. Yeah. Nope. Yeah. We're good. Just as
I think DiNardo's sick of me being on here.
Absolutely tired of you.
Appreciate you. Yeah, appreciate you hopping on here early in the morning and talk about Pirates minor leaguers. I know it's a really good recap of the last week, good preview of the week ahead. So, yeah. Appreciate it, Murphy. Again, Bucks on Deck is where you can find him. So make sure you're subscribed to that Substack. Also, every Tuesday, you and Nola are doing a prospect podcast. So if you're listening to this, you like podcasts, Bucks on Deck podcast comes out every Tuesday. It's just strictly prospect talk. So that if you're into that kind of thing, can't get a better prospect podcast out there.
Absolutely. I appreciate that.
Yep.
There it is. Well, Anthony,
I'll
see you now.
All right, I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, yep, see you guys. You.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley, in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right.
All right.
Good stuff.
Yeah, good let's stuff. Wrap this thing up. I guess let's talk about Oakland and get on with our lives.
Yeah, you can go into your coffee shop. They'll be opening up here in like the next hour.
Seriously.
Yeah, so I guess we can talk here, right, this upcoming series. The Pirates still on the West Coast, still late games. Pirates play the Oakland A's. Jim. This is like the least inspiring MLB series like there has to be ever right now, I feel. It's just, and it's not, it's funny because again, like this is a team that's one game under 500, but just the way they're playing offensively. The Oakland A's are just atrocious offensively as well, by the way. I mean, they are just awful offensively. And again, like the Pirates aren't much better right now at this point in time. But I guess if they have something going for them, I don't know, just kind of touch on this. The Oakland A's starters are also really, really awful too. So maybe there's hope here. You know, like if there's one series the Pirates could maybe be salivating on saying like, hey, this could be the spark plug that we need for our offense to get things going. It's this one. I'm just not confident that they're going to do it because, again, this is also the team that made a Bryce Wilson look like a Hall of Famer. So,
yeah. I mean, the Pirates offense is, with how bad the Pirates offense has been, it has been substantially better than the Oakland offense, right? The Pirates are averaging a full run more per game than the Oakland Athletics. Yeah. 115 runs scored by the Pirates, 84 runs scored by Oakland. So imagine being an Oakland fan watching this team. Like, we know what it's like being a Pirates fan, right? Now imagine taking away 31 runs scored. That's what this Oakland offense has been like. So it's bad. I mean, you look at the Oakland lineup and it's just top to bottom. It's a bad hitting team. There's no one really on this team performing in any capacity. I guess you could say Brent Rooker is having, you know, a pretty good start to the year, but he's also striking out 43.5% of the time. He's probably been their best offensive player. It's just up and down this lineup, it is rough. There are guys in here that I've never even heard of. Like, I don't know who half these people are.
I don't, their GM doesn't either.
Yeah. Like it's, yeah, I don't know. So if you're looking for a time for the Pirates to really like bounce back and get on board and get right this ship, like this is the series to do it, right? You're facing Joe Boyle, Alex Wood, and Ross Stripling. Those are the three starters for the A's. And we're well familiar with Wood and Stripling. You know, we haven't had, I don't think, any any dealings with Joe Boyle, but we Pirates minor leaguers have probably seen him coming up through the minors, you know, since he was in the red system. But another guy who's just very uninspiring. This is his rookie season, but he's getting shelled, like ERA over 7, just not having a good start to the year. So yeah, like, I don't know. Something about me says like, hey, the Pirates are about to wake up here. Like if they can come in here and really even just do what they've been doing, they should win 2 out of 3. But if they can really take advantage of this really struggling Oakland team, like they've got a shot here to hopefully like completely turn the ship around.
Well, see, here's something, and now I'm going to be the Anthony Murphy and rain on this parade. You know, Nola Jeffy says last 7 days and compares the team's OPSs. Like what you said is true about the run differential and such, but a lot of that's skewed because Oakland was rumming. They're historically a bad team last year, you know, at one point, and I'm not going that route, but like they start off really, really bad, where the Pirates start off really, really good offensively. But I'm pinning this to the Philadelphia series, right? April 11th, when that started, because that's when we've seen like everything just unravel offensively for the Pirates. Since that time frame, each team has played 16 games. You want to stack up? The Pirates have a weighted runs created plus of 70. Oakland's is 85. Oh, Oakland has 19 home runs. The Pirates have 11. Oakland has 46 actual runs. Oh, I'm sorry. No, Oakland has 47 actual runs in that time frame. Pittsburgh has 45. Oakland's offense has actually been better since the Philadelphia series, like over the past 3 weeks, basically.
Okay.
That's where I'm coming with this. Like, again, like the first 2 weeks, they were very contrasting teams, but since then they've kind of mirrored each other. And yeah, it's bad. Trust me, like that Oakland offense is really, really bad. But that's kind of where the Pirates have been.
The A's pitching hasn't been as good.
No, and that's what I'm alluding to. Like the pitching is all like that's where the Pirates have something going for them. Their pitching is outstanding. Like this team, the starting pitching is really, really good right now. And the Oakland A's is the Pittsburgh Pirates. So like can the Pittsburgh starting staff shut down the Pittsburgh starting offense? Absolutely. So that's what you'll find. So like it's gonna come down to, as long as the pitching can hold up, that they should probably win games, but I don't know. There might be like 3 extra inning games where it's 0-0 into the 10th. But what I do want to say, you know what this series is missing out on? Jared Jones won't pitch. And I say that just because if there's something that's going on with these two teams, they have a really, really electric reliever, Jim, who we talked about Jared Jones. Like that's third Jared Jones. He just happens to be a reliever, but hey, he's also from here. But like, when Jared Jones is up, it's must-see TV. Jim, you want to talk about this reliever a little bit?
The guy averaging 101.2 miles per hour with his fastball?
Yes. The guy getting like Miller. 18 strikeouts per 9.
Yeah, he has been nasty. And I feel like he kind of burst onto the scene. I think everybody knew who he was, but it was that Yankee series that Oakland played where he struck out Soto twice, struck out Judge like twice. Like he went out there and he just overpowered the best hitters in baseball. He's been absolutely electric this year, commanding his pitches too. Like he's not walking a ton of batters, striking out, but you know, hitting 103 like on a pretty semi-consistent basis is kind of a cheat code.
Right.
I think it was Pitching Ninja who tweeted it out, when Miller started hitting 103 kind of pretty consistently. In the history of Statcast tracking pitches, there have been zero extra base hits on pitches 103 and up. Not one. So here's the thing. If you're a pitcher and you can throw 103, good luck. Good luck, hitters. Like, you might get a single.
On your side.
You might get a single. Like, you might luck into a bloop single somehow. But you're not hitting the ball at all. Like, you're not driving the ball. You're not producing any runs off of a 103-mile-an-hour fastball. So it's a special weapon to have. And, yeah, Mason Miller certainly has that. It's kind of frustrating to know that, like, he's kind of wasting away on the Oakland A's for a bit, because you don't really get to see him that often. He's a closer on a bad team, right?
Right.
But yeah, hopefully the Pirates don't have to see Mason Miller this series.
Yeah. Though, kind of want to watch Mason Miller.
Yeah, I mean, he's fun to
that's
watch.
That's what, like, I'm alluding to. Like, that's the one thing. Like, that's what this series is missing, is like Jared Jones and start. Like, for Pirates fans to watch and, like, appreciate Mason Miller, and like the Oakland fans to watch and appreciate, like, their version of that and Jared Jones and stuff would be kind of cool. So that's like what this series, I guess, is missing. But yeah, like, Mason Miller is super electric. You see these random stats that just kind of like blow you away. And it's super early. I get that. But like, he's pitched 12.1 innings, right? He has seven saves. He has an ERA of 1.46, like, amazing stuff, right? His FIP is a 0.10. Mason Miller is getting extremely unlucky, Jim, extremely unlucky with his 1.46 ERA. The dude has a FIP of a 0.1.
Yeah.
That's one of those stats that just, like, it's just mind blowing. To me. That's,
yeah, and really, if you're thinking about, like, the strength of this Oakland team is their bullpen, right?
Yes.
Like, Mason Miller has been excellent. Lucas Ursig has been excellent. Austin Adams has been excellent. So, like, those three guys for them, and then throw in their lefty TJ McFarland, he's been pretty good as well. So yeah, if you want to do your damage against these guys, do it against the starting staff, because if you let this team hang into the game, or if you let Oakland take a lead in a game, then right, you're going to have issues, because those back end relievers for the A's are a problem.
Yep, and like, I know it's kind of funny here, but as Still City DW just stated, right? Like, they did beat the Orioles 2-1. And you talk about the Yankees series, like, they did split it. So again, this isn't where, like, they're just totally inept, right? Like, it's the Pirates. If they can get to that bullpen, like, that's a shutdown bullpen. They have the lead to the sixth inning. There's a good chance they're going to win this. So yeah, like, that's definitely the key to this success right now. Like, the starting pitching needs to continue to doing what they're doing to shut down their offense, which won't be that hard. We know that firsthand, because it's our offense, but our offense has to awaken, because their starting pitching isn't good. Like, they have to score more than two runs this series to win, which pretty much the case for every series, but like, they got to do it. But at any rate, like, it's a good time to be facing this Oakland offense or Oakland team, because this offense has been so bad that maybe this will be the catalyst. I'm not saying it, but like, this team deserves and needs an Oakland starting pitching staff today more than anybody.
Yeah, they need it. And then hopefully they can take advantage.
Right. Yeah. So I guess that's that. Anything else that you want to add?
No, let's take 2 out of 3 at least. I would love a sweep though, but like, let's get back on track here.
West Coast, 2 out of 3 would be outstanding. Just get back, have a series that you won finally again, and get over 500.
Yep.
Get back to 500, actually.
Yeah.
So, all right. Then let's get out of here.
Let's do it
then. appreciate everyone watching. If you haven't already, like, subscribe, click that join button, see our membership tiers if you'd like to as well. Some pretty cool perks. With that said, actually tonight for our Discord members, our MVP members, we're going to do the watch along. So we'll all be in the Discord watching the A's game together tonight. Hopefully not being super depressed. We might have our therapy before our actual post-game therapy session, Jim.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to try to make it to the very beginning, but I'll definitely be on for a good chunk of that.
There you go. So, yeah, with that said, we'll see you guys later. We'll be back way tonight for the post-game show. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Hey, you all. Thank you for watching. I know we try to provide the most entertaining content that we can, and we'd love to spread it to as many people as possible. So I know it doesn't seem like a lot, but if you could take the 5 seconds to like this video and subscribe to the page, it helps out so much more than you know. Thank you, and let's go Bucks.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.